Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello.
Watcher.
Another week, more games.
Hooray.
More stuff. Less stuff, more games.
Whatever, I don't know, yeah. No, it's relatively quiet again still. Mind you, I played some stuff, so I shall talk about some games. Because I think there was a bit of a departure from the usual script last time.
Can we just cover this slight?
Yeah, well,
there was actually a larger gap between the last episode and this episode.
I don't know.
But
here we go.
What happened shortly after you recorded that, saying how you were doing exercise and it was all going great?
Well, in a staggeringly laser-guided delivery of express hubris, basically about an hour after I finished recording that podcast going on about how awesome exercise was and how I was totally nailing it, something in my back went ping and then I couldn't stand up and walk straight for about 2 weeks. So
remember, kids, don't do exercise.
Well, there you go. I'm sure the takeaway lesson from this is that doing exercise will kill you.
Yeah.
So don't do any at all. No, I'm all right. I don't know. It wasn't even... I suppose it has to have been related to the running because that's the only physical thing I've been doing differently.
You've been getting older.
I suppose I've been getting older. Yeah, that too. But yeah, just something in the small of my back just made a sort of a pain thing. And then I found I couldn't stand up straight upright without hobbling like an old man for quite a while. And then it was exacerbated by... Basically, it was all right. It was getting better. But then every time I'd sit down at a desk, i.e. my computer desk at home or my computer desk at work, for any extended period of time, it would make it worse and the more achy. And I was doing all sorts of comedy hobbling around the office and stuff. And everyone was being all concerned and asking me stuff. And I was having to explain how I did it to myself with too much exercise. I suppose that's the importance of warming up and warming down. I think I probably didn't warm up correctly during one of my runs, my most recent one or something like that. It happens. I'm not letting it put me off, though. That might ordinarily make people think, oh, God, that, I'm not going to do that anymore. But no, I've had 2 weeks away of not doing running, and now I'm basically back to where I was, so I shall just drop back a week on the 9-week schedule and start again, carry on, see how we go. And if I break me back again, then I'll know that there's probably a correlation or some sort of pattern or some sort of science I've done there. But yes, so there we go. So you're looking very smug. Why don't you start?
I should be looking smug because I did my knee in shortly after.
Well, quite. There we go.
Yeah,
neither of us is the winner here, really.
So should I start with a game?
Go on, then. What game have you played?
I'm going to start with
War
Total Warhammer War.
Total Hammer War. Yeah, excellent.
Which is Warhammer Total War because you've got to keep both names right, otherwise it's not wrong.
Uh-huh.
And so it really feels...
They're not the boss of me, I call it Total Warhammer.
Yeah, which is of course Creative Assembly's Total War game set in the currently non-existent Warhammer universe.
I've heard so much about this for so long and even seen it at shows and things that I thought... shows and things, like I go to lots. Happened to be at the one thing I went to in the last 5 years. I'm surprised it's only just come out, to be honest.
Well, it's a couple of weeks ago, but yeah, it finally came out. And you know what?
Yeah.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's probably
I've been hearing mixed things about it on the old Mumble chat there amongst the various friends who've tried it, but...
It's probably the most accessible Total War game for a long time.
I bounced off the original Total War completely.
But it may be lacking in a certain amount of depth.
Okay.
Also, it has the caveat, which is it is based on Warhammer Fantasy, so it is a little bit... constrained by that universe.
Mm-hmm. Which is a sort of weird mishmash showcase that basically exists to chain various fantasy army types together in some kind of coherent battlefield.
Yes,
it's the old world, isn't it? Which is a sort of very very obvious sort of pastiche of our Earth, set like in the Hundred Years' War type era.
Yeah, similar
sorts of nations and things.
Well, you know, it changes. Some things are a lot more primitive than other things.
Yeah.
Where some of them actually are quite high tech, depending on which race it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically, yeah, the old world is the X universe for the X game of Warhammer.
This is a game that they've basically mothballed themselves, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a game which was in development and then Games Workshop went away and killed the game it was based on.
Yes, but they went ahead and did it anyway. So I suppose Total Warhammer is probably your best bet for getting any kind of Warhammer fantasy battle action going forward from here.
Well, sort of, but there's an awful lot of people releasing fantasy battle based stuff and not a lot of people releasing Sigmar based games at the moment.
Mm.
And I think that might say something to Games Workshop.
So they've gotten rid of Warhammer Fantasy Battle and they've trotted out this Age of Sigmar thing, which is basically about angels and demons having massive battles.
Sort of.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't really understand.
It's more about more freeform army building where you can just use whatever models you've got. There's no points values.
Okay.
So you just basically say,
sounds
right,
like
I want
a balancing nightmare.
Oh, it is. And it's a lot simpler, which is not that necessarily a bad thing because the original game was overly complicated.
Depends what you're looking for.
But yeah, it's not beloved, put it that way. But then again, Warhammer Fantasy Battle was selling so badly by the time they canned it that that wasn't particularly loved by the general populace anyway. There's a lot of people who were very invested in it, of course.
Well,
large armies, which then suddenly weren't quite as useful or...
Be a shame. But then no one's taking their models away. No one's taking their rule books away. Presumably they can just agree on a particular edition of a past incarnation of it, 4th edition or whatever,
and then just
carry on playing.
That's
Why
what
not?
A lot of people on the internet say.
Yeah. Does not have to Games Workshop. You've got the stuff, you've got the rules, you can play any way you like.
Yeah, so this is the old game and is larger scale than you would usually get in fantasy because you have squads of 60, 80 people.
Mm. In a sort of scale and dimension, it would be almost impossible to do with models, given how expensive it all is. And even table sizes, generally.
Yeah, it would have to be more of a 10mm, 8mm, 6mm style game to support this sort of levels. Mm. And it works really, really well. It's within the constraints of it is a Total War game. It's basically a rock, paper, scissors game where you're selecting units and telling them to go and attack the right units.
That was it. That was what sort of threw me out of Total War in the first place, was this quite... It became quite quickly and quite obvious and very telegraphed, you know, tutorial tips tell you about all this stuff. But that you were basically having to play paper, scissors, stone the whole way through, and it just irritated me, really. I thought, oh no, I've got the wrong unit here. I'm supposed to use this tool to open that door.
Yeah, it's a lot less of that than the others were.
It wasn't so much war game as point-and-click adventure, it was so in some parts, because it became such a sort of rote, here are the rules, you must follow them, this is the tool to use to get this job done, and so on. And I just sort of rebelled from it a bit.
Yeah.
I really liked the overmap bit, but then I suppose I was probably looking for a game of Civilization that it really wasn't. Yeah. It sort of tricks you at that early stage, because you have this massive map of Europe, and there are all your senators and stuff giving you advice, and you're moving people around on that map, and you think, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, this you're moving your armies around, you're building buildings within cities and maintaining the cities.
But the nuts and bolts of the game, the core of it, is the actual tactical combat.
It's not quite as bad as previous games when it comes to the rock paper scissorsness, because it's taking an existing IP, so it had to use existing units,
yes,
which is quite good. But the problem comes, and this is the problem I've had with all of the Total War games, the UI isn't particularly good, and I say this knowing that it's a standard RTS UI, but I think there's a lot better UI, but I just got no clue what it is.
We were chatting about this on Mumble the other night, and the point came up was that the best UI for an RTS game is one where you are so far zoomed out you can't even see units; they're just dots.
Yeah,
they're
if you
just
zoom colored, out all the way in this game, there's a completely top-down view.
Yeah, that is the optimum. It's like Total Annihilation. No, Supreme Commander. Yes, Supreme Commander. I was playing through ages ago, and you know all these little stompy robot units are fantastically detailed. They've all got their special abilities. They all look awesome on the battlefield, stomping around through forests and things. And you're thinking, well, that's all very well, but I can't see a damn what's going on here. And so invariably, I find myself just mouse wheeling all the way out until eventually they're just little square icons and triangle icons and stuff. And I found myself getting to the point where I was just playing the entire game in that view, because that was the one that gave me all the information I needed to play the game well.
And the problem is, every single fight I have degenerates into a point where it's just lots and lots of units on smaller units. You can't see what's going on. You can't control them, because getting people out of combat and then back into combat somewhere else is such a faff. Because they have to break away from combat and get away.
Get it out,
And it always degenerates down to this level of a bit too much of a furball that's really messy. And I think there's something better there that could be done, but I just can't see what it is.
Is that what war essentially is, though, in real life throughout history? You just throw a whole load of people at their people and hope your people have got better guns, or there are more of them, or the terrain's on your side, or whatever.
If you look at the general history of war, especially back before modern days, it was basically a case of, you're hoping that everyone does what they're told and doesn't come up with any crazy plans of their own.
Or just lose it and run for it.
Yeah, because don't forget, sort of take, say, the battle at Battle. The Battle of Hastings.
All right.
Where basically the English were on top of the hill and the Normans were going up the hill, baiting them, trying to get them to come down.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the people on the top, one of the squads, well, one of the commanders thought, we're winning this now, we can chase them. But it was an obvious bait.
Yeah,
and then it started going pear-shaped.
Yeah, so I suppose a history of warfare is a history of somehow one general trying to command, literally direct the actions of thousands of people, which is almost
no
impossible.
Former communications.
Well, I mean, in modern era, you get more precise communications, but there's still, you know, the individual soldier's own willpower involved. I'm wondering if perhaps like, you know, decades of films and games where we see this repeated narrative of a lone hero taking out whole armies starts to twist and warp what we expect from this kind of thing.
Well, that's sort of where the MOBAs came
from. When an actual RTS, MOBAs, exactly. An RTS, a proper RTS, not a as opposed to a MOBA, is basically about just building up, and hoping that you've managed to build up enough more than they've built up when it comes to committing the troop. The pattern of my RTS playing throughout the whole history of the genre has basically been that. It's the spend time building up and then picking the precise correct moment to launch the stuff you've built up at the stuff they've built up. And if they've built more up in the time than you were built up, you're going to lose. And if you've built more up than they've built up, you're going to win.
Yeah.
And that point of no return, that is definitely a point where you save the game. But it is a point of no return. You throw everything you got at them and you win or you lose. And, you know, so many games like that. Might and Magic, Heroes of Might and Magic's a very bad one for that. Where you're basically building up troops in cities and then marching them across the map to attack stuff. If you've messed up your calculations, or even worse, have no idea of your enemy's strength, then it's just a dice roll at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
Really, it's fun, though, and it works.
What invariably happens is that if you have a game based on that kind of warfare, then and it's a single-player game against a computer, then the computer opponent has to be very carefully calibrated to only have so many troops at certain points during this campaign.
True.
Otherwise, if they just launch off the blocks with the same tools and same speed as you, then it's at best it's going to be a 50-50 chance that you'll win. Otherwise, it's going to massively out-optimise you because it's a computer and you're not, and it will just crush you every time.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a strange thing, strange genre. I can see why it's not hugely popular.
There are some things about it as well which I don't like.
Yeah, back to Total War, yeah.
Yeah, like, if you commit against an army and it's way bigger and more effective than you think it is...
It's game over, usually.
You write that entire army off, and you do not have a lot of armies in this game.
Yeah, yeah. You typically have to load save game at that point and then do some more building.
And this could be after 20, 30, 40 minutes worth of battle where you've been clawing and just about to get a victory.
Well, that then leads into the homeworld problem, isn't it? Which is do you carry your armies between fights?
Yeah.
So mistakes made in the first half an hour of the game can doom you in the eighth hour of the game and so on.
Yeah,
that homeworld problem where you have to get it right all the way through, otherwise you're screwed. You can't just win just enough at the in mission 3. You have to win overwhelmingly in mission 3 because you should be thinking about mission 8 and mission 12.
Well, you get a chance to reinforce between fights, but if you're in a busy area with lots of armies, you don't have a chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a thing that it will do with sending in reinforcements against you. So if you've got three armies around that you're trying to attack, you go after one, and the other two are going to turn up partially during that fight anyway, so it's something that's very difficult.
It sounds like a mess. Are the visuals any good, though?
You get
the sense of being in the Warhammer world.
Oh, yeah.
Warhammer Online got very well right, I think, was the style and the units and the characters and monsters all felt like they were part of it. It's a distinct look and feel.
Yeah, it does feel like Warhammer. It sounds like Warhammer.
It's
got the flavour of Warhammer.
Good.
There's some oddly missing bits. For the first couple of races on the list, it has this introductory mission. And then for the rest of them, it doesn't. But the narration when you start the game plays as if you have just done the introductory mission. So obviously they were pulled at the last minute.
Rushed last minute, missing content.
But no, it's good. I like it. It's just, it's frustrating. And the things that are frustrating are the genre.
It's the RTSs and Total War themselves, rather than the Games Workshop or the Warhammer of it, particularly.
I just wish it was less frustrating in many, many places.
I'd love to see a sort of Dawn of War style thing, but with the fantasy battle stuff.
See, that was the
thing. More of a small scale skirmish.
Dawn
of
War worked quite well as a small scale skirmish.
But then that's
Dawn
40K
of War 2 went, yeah. It's very true. And the Dawn of War 2 went to be an even smaller scale skirmish, which was too far.
Yeah, that sort of becomes, I don't know, almost. I've not played Dawn of War 2, but I I heard them trying to play it on Mumble. It was one of the Friday games that I didn't bother taking part with this time. They had some troubles connecting and stuff, but yeah, it sounded like very quick games, yeah. To be honest. But yeah, it's more, I guess it's more of a Baldur's Gate type of thing almost.
Well, sort of.
Squad of four, yeah. Circles underneath them, moving around, upgrading them and stuff.
Yeah. But Age of Sigmar is very much more a skirmish game than Fantasy Battle ever was. So they're moving towards that. The problem, of course, you've got in the physical space is if you've got to get together an army which is going to need 200 models.
Yes.
That is.
Each of which is like 15 quid each or something stupid.
Yeah, that's a small house's worth of army.
Yeah, yeah.
And very expensive hobby. Model collapsed on that bit.
Yeah.
So that's why they've reduced it down to being a skirmish game.
Because their customer base just had enough and can't afford the prices Games Workshop are trying to charge.
Yeah, because the problem with Games Workshop is they've got this customer base which have been playing for a while and getting new people in.
An aging customer base.
A rapidly aging customer base.
And they're not really recruiting new blood into the ranks. From the youngsters.
Although, you say that, but they do have a new starter set for 40K coming out, which is aimed at kids, being sold outside of game shops.
Yeah.
And has two pages of rules.
Wow. Okay.
Which is going to flop, but yeah.
Well,
So, yeah, it's weird. I'm sure there is room for a good RTS, because you either have the Total War accessible RTS, as it is, or you have the properly hardcore military simulation ones. The
sort of top-down maps with lots of square tokens on them and stuff.
The
Gettysburg
ones,
and whatever.
Yeah, the ones for the serious completists and knowledgeable people who.
I mean, if RTSs are a niche genre, then that's something else. I imagine. I don't know. Actually, it's so far outside my own personal experience. Well, I don't know if it is a niche, or is there a huge following out there?
No, there's a large following. Yeah, but I think the hardcore stuff
is
bigger than the accessible stuff at the moment.
Could be.
Because there's very
little accessible stuff. Talking out of my backside, but I just imagine that the hardcore, you know, Civil War reenactment, Gettysburg with all the little tiles and hex grids and stuff, I imagine that kind of thing is quite a stable genre, as it were. It's got its fans who will just keep going with it and it will just keep moving on. Small, low-key.
And it's servicing a market which knows what it wants.
Yes.
And
quite settled, I expect.
But we're not trying to convert new people as much, because it's got a constant influx of people who want that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas your more accessible RTS is constantly trying to say to normal gamers, do you want to try an RTS?
And they're all going, no, we're playing MOBAs, we're quite happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the problem that, although this is the best-selling Total War in an awful long time, of course, because it has
the license. Encouraging. It's encouraging that there's interest. It's not that the genre's dying, it's more that it's in an odd place and needs to think about where to go, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm trying to think back to other recent RTSs.
There's Grey Goo.
Grey Goo.
Which was a game which I never finished. Talked about a couple of years ago, started it.
Yeah.
But I took a mission which annoyed me and gave up.
I'm thinking Homeworld Desert one.
Oh, yeah. A game I didn't finish.
That struck me as very Dune 2, very sort of retro in a sense. Yes, it was the Homeworld stuff and a modern thing, but it was, harked right back to Dune, the early stuff there. I guess there are others out there, but it's not really something.
Oh, there's one with A, which name escapes me, which is
Planetary Annihilation. Did that come out?
There's Planetary Annihilation, which is okay. Just none of these games are brilliant.
I remember us mocking that one for having like a 90 quid early access version available,
which went down over time.
Yeah. But when it came out finally, was it all right? Did it work?
It had serious balance issues where some units would completely destroy your army. And going by the way you got. New unit types, it was completely random as to whether or not you'd be obliterated by really powerful long-range artillery. I believe they may have fixed that later on, but I could be asked to go back and see.
Fair enough.
So yeah, Total War, Warhammer, War.
Yeah.
What's it good for? Is good if you like that kind of thing. It's lovely if you're a fantasy, Warhammer fantasy.
Yes.
Guy. I'm not sure it's going to convert anyone else to the genre. It's not going to convert anyone else to fantasy, despite the large advert saying, have you considered buying these models?
Oh, God.
Which
are no longer on sale because they canned the game?
Well, anymore. No, the models are, but they're just for a different game now.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's good, but I don't think that it's going to revolutionise anything. And I do think that the consumer I say the consumer, RTS, really needs something big to happen to it in order to make it popular again. And I suspect that thing may have been the MOBA.
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps this is already an academic argument and it's now something else.
Because the more I think about it, all the MOBA does is reduce the amount of control you need to do down to one thing and make sure you get that right. Whereas
so the origins of the MOBA is essentially Warcraft 3, where they introduced hero units. Which were units that had their own little XP bars. They had equipable slots and powers they could unlock as they gained power. And you would basically, that'd be Arthas and, you know, all these heroes from the Warcraft world. And you'd basically steer them around like mega units in a normal RTS game. And they would be capable of single-handedly tipping a battle or changing it entirely, whilst the grunts just sort of charged forward in waves and died and stuff.
Yeah, and then
that's just become essentially codified in what the MOBA.
Yeah, then Warcraft and StarCraft got modded.
Yeah, was that Dota was a mod?
Yeah, and that's where the MOBA came from.
Yeah, yeah, and it turns out that actually most RTS fans don't give a toss about building up massive bases or building out waves and waves of disposable units when you can just superpower up a single unit.
I disagree because I really like building up the massive base. And don't like the micromanaging the combat.
You're not really a MOBA fan.
No. So I reckon there's still a market for that. But then again, that's turned into tower defense, maybe.
That's tower defense. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, tower defense is essentially an RTS where you don't have any units. You just build the base and waves of enemies come at you. Yeah. So it's like the RTS itself as a genre has been picked apart and turned into subgenres, some of which are actually much more popular than the original thing.
Yeah. It's a fascinating example.
It is a strange evolution, yeah. Tower defense and MOBAs are basically all that remains of the traditional RTS now in popular culture, I suppose.
But, apart from the odd outlier.
The occasional, like this, and they're often a nostalgic reinvention type exercise.
Oh, yeah, the Homeworld one was
a Homeworld game. Yeah,
a
Homeworld game that was in the style of Dune. So, Dune 2 and what have you. Yeah, so I don't know. Let's see where it goes next, I suppose, but it's probably gone in many different places.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not entirely sure the RTS is ever going to make a full recovery. But then again, that's an incredibly daft thing to say because it probably...
It's not a recovery, is it? It's an evolution. This is how we get new games and new genres.
Yeah, that is true.
The existing old stuff gets picked apart and the bits we like are kept, the bits we don't like fall by the wayside. So it's probably quite a natural thing.
Yeah, but the upshot is I don't think that Total Warhammer, is going to have the longevity of my gameplay that RTSs used to have back in the day.
Because essentially it's a relic of a bygone era, I suppose.
Yeah.
Even though
I've got other rebooted relics to play instead.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you want to talk about something?
Talking about bygone games, I've mostly been playing, Skyrim. The Elder Scrolls 4, 5, whichever. Falls of Oblivion, wasn't it? Yes. I can't wait for the Elder Scrolls 6. As soon as they get this Elder Scrolls Online nonsense out of their systems and get back on with the real work, I can't wait.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yes, I love Skyrim. I've been playing it a lot. The problem with Skyrim is that eventually you've done it all.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, no, because there's a whole load of DLC that I never get. Now, I don't like DLC. I've often grumbled about it on this show. I think it's often quite cynical.
I should be grumbling about some DLC in my next game.
Yes, well, but there's DLC and there's DLC. So basically, I just went out and thought, oh, sod it, I'm enjoying this game and I've probably had my money's worth by now, playing it more or less constantly on and off since it was released. So I thought, well, all right, let's get the extra bits as well then. So I went out and sprung for all three of the DLCs on Steam. So you got Hearthfire. This is the first one. Hearthfire was only like £4 or so, and that turned out to be justified in the end because essentially all Hearthfire is really player housing. It adds three new buildable houses to the landscape of Skyrim. Now, this is a textbook example of the cynical. I mean, we're almost at the horse barding.
You haven't played Fallout 4 yet?
No, no.
Okay, keep going.
But, this is a textbook example of cynical DLC because essentially it adds... So in Skyrim, you can do lots of missioning, lots of questing and stuff, impressing various leaders of the land, the jarls of each of the nine districts of Skyrim. And for some of them, when you do enough stuff and are their mates, they give you access to a house. You have to pay them some money, and then one of the houses in the city, you get given a key, and you can go in there, and it's full of stuff. And you can talk to the jarl's assistant and pay extra money to have the rooms done out as alchemy labs or enchanting labs or armories or whatever. And that's all very well. So you do that, and you can do that for all but three of the holds in Skyrim there. And I'm thinking, oh, that's a shame, because I quite like to have one around Falkreath, which is a nice sort of coniferous forest, not too snowy region. But no, not allowed a house there. So I thought, oh, well, fair enough. You get your houses, you move on. And then this DLC drops, and it turns out all it adds is three player houses in those missing districts.
Yeah.
And the voice work when you talk to the people in the Jarl's court and stuff to you know, buy the deeds and talk to them about this, that and the other is all utterly seamless from the voice work done for the original base game, which makes me think that this was basically made at the same time as they made the main game, and they just cut chunks of it out and then decided to charge extra for it. I don't know what the original retail for Hearthfire was.
Or you could say
that
they knew it was coming and so did the voice work when they had everyone in the studio.
Well, maybe. It just seems too coincidentally integrated with the basic game compared to the other DLCs, which I'll talk about as we go. But it struck me that they quite obviously done this thing at the same time. This should have been part of the main game, and we're paying extra for it. This is the worst excesses of DLC, I think, is when they decide, so first of all, you got this basic problem, is that if you try and charge more than 40 quid for a brand new PC game, everyone's going to laugh at you, and there'll be like bad things on the internet and all sorts. But you've done a lot of work and you want more money. So how do you do that? Well, you cut a load of it out, and then, because no one really knows what the original game was supposed to have had until you've actually launched it, so you cut a load of it out, put it into a separate bit, and then you sell that separate bit for another 20 quid in about 6 or 3 months time, so thus allowing you to charge effectively 60 quid for a PC game, which otherwise would have gotten you shouted at. Anyway, I'm not explaining anything to anyone listening to this who doesn't already know how it all works, but it's just disappointing to see it still being the normal thing. Do you want all of this game? Are you enjoying it so that you want the entire experience? Well, that's going to cost you 150 quid. It's like, oh, okay, I might as well buy a lifetime MMO subscription, you know, whatever. But that's the way things are done. But I suppose it's, you know, value and price are very subjective things. I suppose I felt it was worth it, so I went out and bought all these DLCs. Anyway, this late in the day, which is my usual way of approaching this stuff, the Hearthfire one was only 4 quid or so, so I thought, oh, all right, that seems probably fair. So yeah, there's a few extra bits and pieces. You can upgrade, you build the house in sections, you have to go off and find lots of materials. You know all those lumber yards around the place? You actually get to talk to them and buy lumber, and it gets delivered to the site of your place, and then that's part of the materials. And it's all done through the blacksmithing interface. You set your building cupboards, or, you know, south solars, or greenhouses, or towers, or whatever. There are three different houses. Presumably you can own them all. That's usually the way it works in these Elder Scroll games. You get to do everything. I've been working on one, built it up. It's quite nice, you know. I mean, I'm not really that into the sort of homemaking, role-playing, wandering around my little house in those games.
Mostly in your single-player game.
In my single-player game, yeah. I'm mostly out there slaying dragons, as you do. But it's a nice touch. It's interesting enough. I'm probably just working towards completing all the houses so that I can tick off the achievement, and then that's that, really. I probably won't even go near them again. But it's nice to have somewhere to dump all the relics you keep digging out of these tombs all the time. I don't really sort of want to sell them, because that's irresponsible. What if, like, someone who isn't a hero gets hold of one of these relics and hurts themselves? Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. So then you got the there's Dragonborn and Dawnguard. Dawnguard was the first one, so I got that. That one's a more full price thing. I think that's still about 15 quid, 20 quid or so, something like that at the moment. That is essentially whole new content, whole new storyline. It's I imagine worth it. You get enough content there that it seems like you've got your money's worth. It adds, all of a sudden, two massive castles appear on the overmap that weren't there last night.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, exactly. There's one right up in the top left corner, out in the snowy seas, Castle Volkiar, which is a big sinister place full of vampires. And then there's the Castle Dawnguard, which is out in the lower right corner, and that's a bastion of vampire hunting goodness and stuff. And so almost immediately you find yourself drawn into this storyline involving the reformation of the Dawnguard, who are an order of ancient vampire hunters, and there's a whole little faction. They're basically like the Mage's Guild or the Fighter's Guild, a whole other faction there you can go and do mission lines for. Big long quest involving vampire lord that no one had ever heard of before you applied the DLC, and he suddenly wants to, as I understand it, his big master evil plan is to extinguish the sun, which shows
works for vampires temporarily.
I don't know.
It's a short-term plan, really.
Well, eventually the world will just freeze to death and there'll be nothing to feed on.
Yeah,
so he's not thinking this through, really. Plus, I don't think he has a real grasp of the orbital mechanics and sheer stellar physics involved, but you know, it's Skyrim. Well, there's probably an Elder Scroll for that. So you start to rebuild this ancient order of vampire hunters, and meanwhile there's this vampire count, and right away you get sort of captured or brought before the vampire count for some reason or another right at the start, and get given the option of joining the vampires or joining the Dawn Guard. You start as a sort of joining the Dawn Guard thing as the main hook to get into it, and then almost immediately you're given the opportunity to bunk off and join the other side and become a vampire. And it's clear they really want you to do this, because all the loading screen tips are talking about the new cool super vampire powers and this, that and the other, and so I hate vampires. To me, vampires to me are very much like Nazis are to Indiana Jones. You know, I just get sick of them everywhere in popular culture. Oh, vampires are so cool, they're so mysterious, they're what we'd really want to be. No, vampires are rubbish, I hate them. And so I immediately said no, and then basically went off and joined the Dawn Guard. And I thought, great, this is an order of people who are basically about killing vampires whenever they see them with extreme prejudice. And I thought, that's fantastic. That suits me right down to the ground. I'm going to enjoy this romp. And then about two steps into the storyline, you're immediately saddled with a sassy vampire princess, buddy cop type partner sidekick. And she's like wanting to stop the evil vampire lord from putting the sun out for some reason or something, and so you end up, and I was picking every dialogue option I could in the hope that it would allow me to just stake her through the heart as soon as she appeared, but no, nothing. And it's clear they want you to like this girl, and they want you to follow around, and then they want you to agonize about the difficult moral choices, and I'm thinking, no, cut her head off, and it won't let me, which is annoying. She's got the classic Elder Scrolls important NPC protection.
She can't
actually be killed. Even, I mean, I have her following me around when dragons are attacking and stuff, so you know, and she's there being blasted full in the face with flames. No, she just like crouches down and waits for me to finish it off.
I lost Lydia once, knowing full well that she's going to live out her life wherever I'd lost her, and no chance of death, roaming the world forever.
Following the main story, when you get to Balgroth, the first Jarl there, and you do his favours, and he says, yes, you can. I'm going to appoint the house carl to you, and yeah, now you can buy property, and I immediately drop everything I can do and immediately try and raise 5,000 gold pieces so I can buy the house, so I can have somewhere to dump Lydia so that she leaves me the hell alone. I always play Skyrim single player, literally single player. I mean, Lydia's nice if you're not that great at it, or you've picked some weird skill combo that's not very good at fighting dragons.
I make her carry stuff.
Yeah, she can carry stuff as well, but on the whole, I just don't like having someone follow me around the whole time. It's like becomes a massive escort mission all the time. Anyway, so I'm on this big sort of vampire hunting storyline thing, and it's quite good. There's new content there. They're clearly very proud of their you can be a vampire and look at the superpowers you get. Basically, apparently when you become a vampire, there's a whole perk tree that you can sort of work your way up and earn perks by feeding on the living, and you can actually turn into a vampire sort of vampire lord form, which gives you like innate health drain attack in one hand and a raised corpse in the other hand, and pushing the dragon shout button makes you turn into a cloud of bats and fly across the stuff. And it's like they've just totally, someone at Bethesda's totally into vampires, and they're really awesome, dude, we're going to make vampires. And I just thought, oh god, so I'm relishing the opportunity to murder them whenever I come across them.
Yeah.
Trouble is, this expansion adds to the general problem. So if you're anywhere into the main story on Skyrim, which essentially is about dragons turning up out of nowhere and attacking the land, literally, physically, this isn't just a background story point, they do physically turn up. They're like helicopter gunships, and they're an absolute bastard to bring down with a dagger. And they just randomly attack you every so often when you fast travel from one place to another, or go in or out of a door, there's a chance a dragon will appear and just start torching everything and everything around you, and you have to deal with it. And that sort of lends a certain narrative urgency to you getting on with the main story, which is totally not what Skyrim or any Bethesda game is about for me.
No.
Those games are about going off and pottering around and doing things at my own pace, so I get quite irritated by the constant dragon attacks every so often. But they increment your power-ups, your dragon shouts go up when you deal with them and stuff, and that's fine. You sort of learn to live with it, but Dawn Guard then adds vampire attacks to that as well. So as well as the dragons, there's a chance that two or three vampires will turn up and just start health draining you and raising corpses around and trying to wail on you with spells and quite powerful weaponry and stuff. So you got two of these things going on at the same time now. And then, of course, when you add the third one, there's more stuff happens as well. Anyway, so it becomes, the more DLC you add and the more unresolved, I don't even think it stops when you resolve the storylines as well. I think once you complete the main the main Skyrim story, you still get random dragon attacks every now and then because it assumes you need power-ups, you need souls to do the powering up with. Anyway, so it's getting really quite hectic every time I travel from one place to another. There's like a 1 in 3 chance a dragon attack, a 1 in 3 chance a vampire, group of vampires will jump me, and I think something else goes wrong with the other bit as well. So, yeah, that gets a bit irritating. But, yeah, I'm working my way through. There's a new crossbow weapon. You get that with the Dawn Guard. I haven't tried it, really. I'm using a one-handed, double dual-wieldy type character at the moment, so I'm not really doing range, but that seems interesting. You can hire armoured trolls as combat pets. The Dawn Guard offer you that. So there's bits and pieces that you get if you join the anti-vampire faction as well. There's stuff for you there as well. But it's clearly been written by people who think vampires are cool, and personally I don't think they could be more wrong. My personal favourite interpretation of vampires is China Mayville in The Scar. There's a character in there who's like a vampire lord who's fled from the City of the Dead. And the City of the Dead, the vampires are regarded as pitiful junkies by the actual proper undead because of their debasing addiction, and even the cattle are above the vampires in that society. It's a city run by liches, proper
dead. It's like in Buffy where the vampires are looked down on because they're tainted by humans.
It's just exactly. Vampires are not to be aspired to, God. Anyway, so yeah, so that's that. I like that. I think, you know, despite, apart from my own personal disagreements with the narrative direction of it all, it does seem like a solid amount of content and does open up the game, add more stuff. I think the real winner for me has been Dragonborn. Dragonborn's the third DLC, probably the most recent. I guess there's not any other.
No,
and that one has a whole new map. You basically get to go to Solstheim, which fans of Morrowind will remember as is the second expansion DLC for Morrowind, and that is a whole island off of the north coast of Morrowind. And the Vardenfell Island itself, on which Morrowind takes place, in the time period of Skyrim, the volcano there has blown its top and totally destroyed the island, covering it in ash, so you can't go to Morrowind itself. But Solstheim's a small island to the north. As soon as you get there, you go there on a boat and you find that there's a Redoran village there, which is all done in the sort of the curvy shell shapes of the villages in Morrowind, in the Ashlands and stuff. And there's all the same sort of flora and fauna, the scathe crawls and trauma roots and stuff. It's a really fantastic, nostalgic sort of nod to Morrowind, but done in the modern engine, in the modern style. I forgot to get some video of it, which is a shame, but you can probably find some elsewhere. But so almost immediately you find yourself running across a little mini Morrowind, which is really nice, you know, using the Skyrim engine. And I imagine that whole expansion's a boon to modders. I know there's a couple of projects on the works to try and upgrade Morrowind and Oblivion to the Skyrim engine. So I imagine just the sheer art assets available in these mod packs will help them immensely. But so you find yourself drawn into a bit of a plot there where there's all of the people in the town and the local village and stuff having these sort of waking dreams and they can't remember what they were doing, and they're actually building these weird sinister monuments and temples whilst in a sort of hypnotic trance. And there's this cult of a chap called Mirek who are sort of commanding them in their sleep to build these giant edifices and temples for some sinister purpose, and you get drawn into trying to understand and work out and thwart all that. And there's a whole new map there, there's whole new dungeons and all sorts of stuff off that map. You know, you go on this little boat trip, you can ferry between two boat places, and a whole new overland map with about 30 or 40 new dungeons or caves or ruins or whatever to go wandering around in, and a big old plot that goes with that as well. There's the Stalrim stuff that folks might remember from the Blood Moon expansion of Morrowind, which is basically a kind of magical enchanted ice that you can make armour and weapons out of, so there's all sorts of stuff to do with that. There's Telvanni mushroom trees. I was quite pleased to see that. There's a little set of those on the one corner. Really, I'm not that far into that one, but that really does, I think, you know, to be honest, I think that is definitely the most worthwhile spend if you're going to involve yourself in DLC at all on the Skyrim front there.
Or just get the one that's got them all in.
There's probably a Game of the Year edition coming or already there or something.
It's been out for
I imagine years. Most people probably don't have that because they went and bought Skyrim right at the start, though, because it was awesome. So, you know, anyway, I'm done giving consumer advice to people because I'm always much further behind than anyone I'm talking to, usually. But, yes, very much enjoying it. They have, yeah, and, oh, yeah, so adding this Dragonborn expansion adds cultist attacks every time you teleport.
Oh,
anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I've got three different calamities waiting for me on the dice roll every time I'm fast travel anywhere. It is forcing me to become very powerful very quickly, though. You either do or you die. But, yeah. Yes, so it does get a bit hectic, but you can turn these mods on and off at the options menu at the start on the launcher thing. There's a little tick box list, so if you don't want any of it to be going during one particular playthrough, you can disable them. That's that's the way to do it. But yeah, it's quite busy. I could see me playing Skyrim for many more years now, and probably that'll last me hopefully until Elder Scrolls 6. So that'd be a good thing. But yes, so there we go. That's my top tip this week is Skyrim.
Cutting edge, we are.
Over to you.
I'm going to actually talk about something which came out this week.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about the second bit of DLC for Just Cause.
Okay.
We had the air pack to start with, which had the helicarrier and the powered wingsuit.
Is that the one we saw at that show?
Yeah.
Okay, there's another one since then.
Yeah, this week we got...
This is Just Cause 3.
Yeah, we got the land pack, which adds mechs.
What?
Which is basically... four-legged with wheels on the feet, so it's not actually a walking mech type thing, tank things.
Okay, I was about to say, stompy robots, yeah.
And they basically have, they have an autocannon, a nice weapon.
Uh-huh.
They also have a force push thing, which can blast things away. And they also have a force pull, force push thing, where they can pick stuff up using Bavarian magic and throw it.
Right. Why not? Yeah. Okay.
These things are very, very underwhelming, and I completely ignore them. The problem is, and this is a very common problem in these games, especially in Just Cause.
Yeah.
Also, Saints Row had the same problem.
I was about to say, this sounds like the bonkers transition from Saints Row 3 to 4, where they've just given up any pretense of it being any kind of serious, and they're just throwing any sort of crazy in they want.
Why get in a vehicle? It slows you down. I can take out everything faster when I'm not in the stupid...
Well, it's particularly once with the whole parachute and grappling hook combo. Once you've got the hang and the flow
and the
of that...
the wingsuit now.
The wingsuit, which lets you literally fly.
The powered wingsuit, so it's a jetpack. As well,
exactly. It's the Saints Row 4 problem. I didn't get in a single vehicle in Saints Row 4 except for the steal some vehicles missions. Yeah, why bother?
Yeah, so it's added a vehicle which really is a little bit pointless that you're never going to use outside of the DLC in the missions that you and challenges that you're given.
Yeah,
it does add a small new island,
okay.
Which has,
so we like content. We like new maps,
which has
new adventures,
some new takeovers on it.
Okay,
which is cool.
Yeah,
but I sort of did that in a couple of hours.
Yeah, so very small,
and it has two missions. And
I'm not sold.
I haven't finished it yet, but that's only because the second mission crashed right at the end, and I can't be asked to replay it today because I've already done that mission once today, and it was a run around, moving a progress bar along as you help blow stuff up, then protect people, then run along to another thing. And I just can't be arsed. It's not very good. I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
And it crashed, so it's buggy still.
Oh, right. Well, that doesn't help if it's already an underwhelming product that actually crashes a lot. So, yeah.
Mm. So
was the air pack any good? Was that worth?
It added a rather large air area.
Yeah.
But again, same problem. A couple of issues.
How much were these? Were these 20 quid?
I can't remember how much they were.
15, 20 quid, I suppose. The usual sort of price for this kind of thing.
It
doesn't sound worth it. This is the thing. This is the thing with DLC. We've got these wildly varying ideas of how much you should get and how good it should be and how long it should take.
Yeah, this is adding nothing to the main game. Although if they do add anything of any substance, then people just say it's cut out from the main game.
Yeah. Well,
but this in the same week, of course, where The Witcher... Witcher 3 releases a bit of DLC which is bigger than most other games. So...
There is no sort of standard understanding. Well, I suppose there's much of a standard understanding of what a full price game should consist of either, really. I mean, and we always call out ones that aren't very good versus ones that are great value for money. Yeah. So DLC is probably no different.
I'm just getting to the point where I'm not buying DLC for games, apart from a couple of cases, because it's never
worth it. I normally
don't,
yeah. I mean, I've played so much Skyrim and enjoyed so much Skyrim, and I was starting to wear it thin, so I thought, yeah, okay, if there's some new stuff out there. And yeah, there are a lot of player mods out there as well, but I just have a certain lack of faith in the ability of the average fan to put together balanced and well-written content,
An awful lot of chaff to get through to you find the good stuff plot-wise.
Whereas if you're buying stuff from the people who made the original experience, you've got at least some kind of basis to assume it's going to be of a similar consistency. It's not always the case.
The writing in this is very consistent with the writing of Just Cause 3.
Fair enough. DLC.
Yeah. So I'm really unimpressed by this DLC. And
so don't bother anything.
No, it's
really not. It's not enhanced your enjoyment of what the base game was, has it?
The Sky one gives you the wingsuit, which, you know, definitely makes the game a lot easier for when you're doing stuff, because it just means you move around.
I got on all right with the parachute and grappling hook.
Yeah, but this is
from
lot,
the second game.
This is a lot quicker, though.
Well, yeah, but it's about enjoying the journey, you know, the scenery. Plus, you could always just extract with the helicopter and drop on somewhere else.
Yeah, and this one, as far as I can tell, doesn't add anything of any real...
Comedy vehicles and a few more bases to blow up.
It's two types of mech. Bunch of new challenges, which are basically in the mech, can you blow stuff up?
Well, yeah.
And a tiny island, which you'll finish in an afternoon. So, yeah, it does not feel like it's really worth it.
Well, there we go then.
Yeah. So, avoid.
Okay, cool. I also been playing Minecraft.
You surprised me.
Yes, this is the regrowth series that you may have seen on other bits of YouTube. But basically,
please go watch it.
I've been sort of really drawn into that now because I had this big frenzied brainwave of all sorts of cool ideas of things. Because basically, I'd largely ignored all the technological mods and things in this thing. I've been quite happy growing my little flowers or just planting grass or whatever. But I've started to pick up an interest in some of these like transport pipes and BC transport pipes. And what's the other thing? Kinetic pipes.
Yeah, there's an episode coming up in the next week or two.
I discovered this thing called an AE system.
Where I'm explaining in patient details what the AE system's for and what it can do with crafting, and here's all the recipes, and you could hear it clicking during the episode.
Yes. So having with my newfound understanding of Minecraft engineering type stuff, so I've been trying to work and integrate that into my magical stuff, and I've come up with some truly terrifying ideas and plans and things. I don't want to spoil the specifics because you get to see those in the Regrowth series, but I'm just, the modern state of modded Minecraft, a typical mod pack will contain, 140 or so mods, 120 mods?
Yeah,
there's a vast list of player add-ons to the basic game.
Some are several hundred.
I mean, I've utterly lost interest in vanilla Minecraft for its own sake. Why would anyone put themselves through that? I need all these mods now. I've become dependent. But many of them I just have never tinkered with, never understood properly, never worked through.
Because that's why the quest
books are really useful for that, because they lead you through it in a kind of staged manner that... promotes a kind of logical discovery, allowing you to incorporate the things you've learned already into new things as you go. So having some of the structure there rather than just here are all the mods, go crazy, and I've often been on servers like that and just not known where to start. So it's been good. So yes, I've been spending quite a lot of time. See, I've got this particular, I don't know if we've reached it on the show yet. Has the Mana Core been on the show?
The Mana Core has been seen.
Yeah, well, a couple of versions of it anyway. But I got this, it basically runs off explosions. Little blocks of TNT blow up, cause massive damage in a sort of 10 block radius. But if you've got the right kind of magical flower next to it, the flower soaks all that up instead and turns it into mana and turns it into power, blah, blah, blah. But it's all about timing, and sometimes the reactor that I built, which essentially runs on bombs, sometimes it misfires and tends to blow itself to bits. And I found
the bombs return to their normal behaviour.
Yes, the bombs don't turn into magic, they just turn into explosion. And so that tends to rip the thing to bits. And this almost always happens around sort of about 1 a.m, and it takes about 1.5 hours to rebuild the reactor each time. So I've not been getting a lot of sleep, but I've been coming up with better plans for that, and I've been really getting into that. So yeah, spending a lot of my spare time just working on the Regrowth server, doing background tasks, which I then have to explain when we do a Regrowth episode. But that's pretty much absorbed most of my gaming time, really, and all my other hobbies and things as well that I've been talking about previously.
So with your newfound love of technology,
pipes are brilliant.
Sorting systems,
pipes for everything.
I noticed you
rewired all your pipage. Yeah. Yeah, it was a right. Now I understand what it's supposed to do. I can see what a nasty rat's mess your blinking pipe work is. So I went in and started fixing it all. I didn't even know it was wrong until I understood it all. Now my estimate. Now you've gone down considerably in my estimation.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start a new facility in the next episode we record.
A new facility.
Where we can actually lay out everything for the
correct pipes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So now you've got all that sorted. The problem with that is everything starts to be all samey.
The basic consistency of a typical Minecraft play experience changes significantly. What I'm finding is that previously it was about building cool things out of blocks, essentially Lego. But then I'm starting to find that once you've got all these tools at your disposal, the automation itself becomes the game. You end up in a sort of gameplay state where you don't just make like 100 stacks of dynamite. You build a farm that can produce dynamite and then a thing that can auto-create it and then pipe it and move it to here. And so that basically you find yourselves, I suppose it's like modern industrial processes the world over, is that you don't want, you know, to hire 100 people to spend a day building things. You want to hire 4 people to spend 50 days to build a machine that can then build hundreds of things continually with no intervention. Yeah. So the automation, the benefits of automation, anyone in any kind of tech industry will probably see that. And that sort of comes into Minecraft.
Yeah, and every mod does solve something in a different way because we've now got 2 different forms of farms.
It turned from a sandbox building creative game look at this cool castle I've built into essentially, do you remember the Impossible Machine?
Yes,
it's turned into that for me. It's turned into a puzzle game about processes and logic and how can we make this the most clever system we can. And I suppose the real danger becomes is that you lose sight of why you needed a million blocks of TNT in the first place. You built this machine that can make a million blocks of TNT an hour. Okay, and why? I don't know.
Oh, only a million. I know you upgraded the barrel.
Yeah, the barrel needs to get bigger again, I think. Yeah, but that's all right because my next machine's going to use it at quite a rate, so we'll all be good.
You know you have to produce it the same rate that we use it, so having the massive stock doesn't help.
I know, I gotta work on that as well. Yeah. But it becomes about processes, it becomes a puzzle game. It's interesting how Minecraft can be so many things to so many people, I think. Probably the secret.
That's
success.
Why it sold 100 million.
Yeah, you see that
copies.
News in the week. Yeah, 100 million copies. Has any game sold that much?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Tetris has. Mm.
Can't be many, though.
You'd imagine that WoW's up close.
100 million copies sold ever, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that has a high turnover.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
And The Sims have sold quite a few and stuff. But yeah.
It's got to be a relatively short list, though. Yeah. I'm sure we could find it if we did the research. I might have to poke around. But yeah.
GTA 5 has done 67 million. Okay. Or is it 50 something?
Yeah. Minecraft is hugely successful.
It is.
Very compelling.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wonder Microsoft paid a small fortune for it.
Mm. So there we go. I'm mostly doing Minecraft and Skyrim at the moment. I don't really do new things.
Yeah, and that's all I've really got worth talking about.
Right, do your spiel.
You can go along to howtomurdertime.com, find our previous episodes in audio and video form. You can go along to YouTube, where you can like this video and subscribe to it and see our other stuff. If you like it, then you may up the chance of YouTube actually getting around to giving you a copy of it when you subscribe, because that's voodoo and I don't understand that.
I don't even know what a subscription is. No.
And you can join us, you can catch our regrowth episodes there, where you will see us over the next week or so doing lots of stuff with AE systems and witchery.
Yes. And TNT. Hail Explodiana.
Yeah. Oh, and superpowers.
Superpowers. Yeah. That was unexpected. Yeah. Look out for that.
Yeah. And so join us next time when we'll be talking about more games.
See you later.
Goodbye.